There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, hour number two. Coming up in just a couple minutes, we'll check in with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. Was at the ribbon-cutting ceremony today. I think that was earlier this morning, 11 o'clock or so, for the new VA outpatient facility. He'll talk to us more about that in just a few. Want to go to the phones now, and Donnie is in Chonchula. Hey, Donnie.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How about you?
I'm doing well. Look, I hadn't been able to catch your show for a while now, but and I don't know, somebody may have brought this up, but I'm on disability and don't have much money coming in. How would you think I would take that gas tax?
Well, I think like anybody. I mean, you don't want to pay it, but I mean, we're looking at how much gas do you burn in a given week, do you think? How many gallons?
Well, I don't travel a whole lot. I stay pretty close to the house.
Okay.
But now let me at first, I didn't think about this gas tax, but I spent 7 years in the 90s driving a big truck all over the country, and I had a friend of mine that's retired now that was on the road and bridge crew in Mobile County. And if you would have known what kind of shape the bridges were in 90, and they hadn't got any better.
Right.
But look at it like this. I had a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago. I was talking to him about it at church one night, and he said, Donnie, that's the closest thing we'll have for a gas tax, that gas tax as a flat tax. And I got to thinking about it. The folks that don't pay taxes, that's running around through here, that's money under the table that hadn't paid taxes, they're going to pay taxes.
Sure.
When they buy a gallon of gas.
I agree.
If you get a family from Indiana that's going to spend a week at Gulf Shores, they're going to drive the length of Alabama, stay in Gulf Shores for a week, how many tanks of gas are they going to burn?
Yeah, at least, I don't know what they're driving, but at least they're burning two and a half, I would say.
Right. And, but that's, you know, that's my deal on it.
And that's one of the things they said in defense of this. They said, while they felt this was better, and as they said, there's a chance of getting money from out-of-state people on this, you know, almost like a lodging tax. But the case is, I mean, it's some percentage. Majority of it will be we Alabamians paying it. We're buying, obviously, more than any traveler through, you know, for gas in the state.
Right. That's right. So my deal is, go for it. I'm all for the gas tax because it's a flat tax. Everybody's going to pay it.
There we go. Appreciate the call. Thank you, man. From checking in from Chunchula to OBA. Greg's in Orange Beach. Hey, man.
Morning. Afternoon, rather.
Well, take whatever.
Here, I'm opposed to tax. Opposed to any tax. But specifically, the other day you had Chris Elliott mm-hmm. on your show, and he said, well, you know, nobody should be surprised about this because he had been talking about infrastructure during his campaign. And he had been. But not one time did he say he was going to be an advocate for any kind of gas tax. And in fact, he said he would not favor any kind of tax of any kind. He said that. And then on your show, you know, of course, he's in favor of it, and we all know he likes to raise taxes. But this is something else that really got me about anything else. When I brought up the fact about the wasteful spending of ALDOT, well, Chris Elliott says, well, we're not going to get into the weeds on that, you know, about how they spend the money. Well, my question if the Alabama state legislature is not going to get into oversight of these different agencies, especially ALDOT, then who in the world is going to look after
and so
that?
So maybe you and I are understanding it differently, because the first bill that passed is the oversight bill, right? That has the new group on top of what was already happening. It has the new group of senators and representatives that are the kind of the open court for ALDOT, you know what I'm saying, where you can bring you can bring your own issue. Like if you feel like your community got shorted on something or something like that on a program, well, you can bring it up to them, you know, there. So I mean, there's, if they live up, and I can't, if you say, oh well, they're not going to do that, well, I don't know, I can give them a chance to do it or not do it. If they do what they say they're going to do, there's more oversight than there was before. And if they're doing wrong and there's shady deals on it, well, let's bust it wide open. I just, you know, but just saying it's going on and I can't prove it right now and I'm just going to sit back and say it, I don't think that's fair either. But I mean, I hear what you're saying. All right, we're coming right back. AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne joins us to talk about the ribbon cutting at the new VA outpatient facility. Good news for our local veterans. Good news. We'll talk to him next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. As I mentioned a second ago, we check in with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, who was here and did the ribbon cutting at that VA facility just a little bit ago. Hey, Congressman.
Great to be with you, Sean.
Hey, good to have you on to talk about this. So, ribbon cutting today. Tell them specifically. It's the VA clinic. It's the one here in Mobile County, right?
Right. It's at Tillman's Corner, right there where you get off of the Tillman's Corner exit off of I-10. Brand new building built for the specifications for an outpatient clinic for our veterans in this area. Much bigger facility than the one they had over there on Spring Hill Avenue. Much better laid out. Going to be a much better way to provide these outpatient services to our veterans. This is something that's been in the work for 10 years, so it's a big deal to get this thing open.
Now, I remember you and I talking about that years ago, about the old facility there, the Spring Hill Avenue facility, and being time to do something else for our veterans in this area. So brand new facility here for veterans. Hey, what is the, like, who gets to come? Yeah, because I know that, you know, there have been times that folks in my family that are veterans had gone to Biloxi. Will people from Mississippi come here or Florida, or what? Is there a certain zone for this?
Well, it's for veterans from anywhere, okay. But obviously the practicality is it'll be veterans in this particular area. This is an outpatient clinic, so most of the people that are from here that are going over to Biloxi are getting inpatient services like surgery.
Okay.
But so much of what veterans need is outpatient. And so we think this is a big step forward to providing quality health care to all of our veterans in Southwest Alabama.
Talk to me about this facility. It's pretty big.
It's huge. I mean, particularly when you look at it compared to what we had down on Spring Hill Avenue, it is very big. And very well laid out, too. That's the thing that I was really struck by, is how they've laid it out to make it very veteran-friendly, make it easy, lots of good parking, which we had terrible parking down Spring Hill Avenue, easy for them to get in and out, and certainly the appropriate layout for them to receive the services that they need.
And we'll talk about like the pullback from this ribbon cutting today in this facility, and we'll go back to it right here in our area and talk about the bigger issue facing veterans and the VA. And you and I have talked about this over the years. Is it a brick and mortar solution, or is it a liberty to use other doctors solution, or something in between?
Well, I think in some respects you can see some brick and mortar, like what we've done here in Mobile. I think that's a big step forward, but for a lot of our veterans, they just need the freedom to take a card from the VA and go get their health care from whoever they want to get it from whenever they need to get it. So it's a mixture of the two. Now, we do know that there's certain things that veterans face that the normal person doesn't face. And so you do have to have, on some of these things, some specialists in order to do it. And certainly people that understand the particular needs of veterans are good. But and I think this outpatient clinic is a perfect example of how that's going to work. But around the country and here in Southwest Alabama, we've here and seen a lot of cases where people aren't getting the health care that they need when they need to get it. And that's why this choice program is so very important.
Yeah, the wait times, and I know there's been marked improvements from when we first started talking about this with all the debacles, even here, you know, I know it was nationally, but we had our own in the state of Alabama. I mean, almost beyond the pale kind of stuff going on in VA facilities. Has that been amended? Has that been fixed? Are we on new footing on that?
We're doing better. I went over to the Biloxi facility several months ago and had a meeting with the new person in charge over there. And he's also in charge of our area over here for this outpatient clinic. And we had a very sort of candid conversation about what had been the case before. Everything I'm seeing and hearing is that there have been significant improvements in this area. On the other hand, the biggest problems that we saw in Alabama were with the Montgomery facility.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing from Congresswoman Roby that has not gotten better yet. So
You're kidding me.
I hate to hear that for anybody.
You're kidding me, because it was, and I'm hoping I'm jogging people's memory, the stories that came out of that facility, I mean, were, it wasn't just that it was hard for veterans to get an appointment, all the side stuff going on, the shenanigans and the how they were acting, that was out of control.
Yeah, it was out of control, and I think they've made corrections to that, but we're still not seeing the adequate delivery of quality care there at the Montgomery facility that those veterans deserve. If you get in the northern part of my district, you know, up in Monroe County, a lot of veterans from Monroe County go to Montgomery. They don't come down here or to Biloxi. So it's important to me that we get that Montgomery facility fixed, because I've got constituents that are not receiving the care that they should be receiving and certainly not receiving it timely.
Okay. Just joining us, talking to Congressman Bradley Byrne and talking about the new VA facility to be opened here. Outpatient, so there's going to be probably a lot of traffic through that. I mean, I guess it needs to be as big as it is. Do you have any idea how many people could possibly be using this facility?
Well, I can't give you a precise figure, but it's in the tens of thousands from this area, the people who are eligible to come. And I think some veterans have not been using the facility down on Spring Hill Avenue because they just weren't getting the care that they needed. And I've talked to a number of veterans who have told me that now that they've moved to this new location and they are changing the way they deliver services here, I think they're going to see a pickup in business here, which is a good thing. We want these veterans to get the health care that they need when they need it and make sure it's quality.
Okay. If anybody is listening, which there's a lot of, you know, in AL1, for sure you know it, and in this audience, a lot of veterans out there, if they have any questions, if they're changing to the new facility, does they just show up? Is there any kind of process, any kind of number they call? Where would you direct them?
Well, I think the smart thing to do is to call ahead, because you don't want to call and not have an appointment. So I would call ahead to the local facility. I don't have the phone number. I'm sorry, but you can find that out.
We'll Google that.
And call and make an appointment. And I think that they're going to find that they're getting a lot better services now at this new facility. And I'm pleased with everything that I'm seeing out there. I think it's a new day for the veterans in this area and the health care we can provide them.
All right. Just closing thoughts here before we wrap up. Before, you know, looking back to Washington, what's the biggest issue you think you're facing in the next 2 weeks?
Well, I think in the next 2 weeks we're going to continue to bang away at this whole business about what we're going to do on the border. I mean, you know, we had this unfortunate vote last week on trying to reverse the president's declaration of a national emergency. He's vetoed that, as he should have. They do not have the votes to override his veto, but we're still going to have to, you know, deal with the vote to override, which will be a week from tomorrow, and all that sort of stuff, which is really distracting us from more important things that we need to be focused on. On the Armed Services Committee, we're doing all the prep work before we take up the National Defense Authorization Act, and I've been sitting through these briefings, and I just got to tell you, the stuff we're hearing about China is really unnerving. China is getting to be a bigger problem almost by the day.
Okay, you've been talking to us about that for quite some time. I know we've talked in the past about the man-made islands or atolls out there that the Chinese are occupying and maybe using, obviously, for a footprint, but for some kind of naval bases as well. Is that still an issue we're dealing with? And what do we, I mean, what, when you say the buildup in China, the Navy? Is it their army? What is it?
It's everything. And most disturbing is what they're doing with their missile program, the cyber program, and stuff they're doing in space, which is the new, you know, warfighting domain. I mean, their technology has dramatically improved because they spent so much darn money on trying to improve their technology. Of course, they steal technology from us. We know that. And they're doing things in this hemisphere that bother me. For example, the Chinese have bought up some coastal positions near the Panama Canal, which is obviously their effort to try to be in a position to be able to foreclose us from being able to use the canal, both for commercial and military transport. You know, when we send ships from the Atlantic over the Pacific, Navy ships, they go through the Panama Canal because it takes so much more time to go around the southern tip of South America. So everything China is doing right now bothers me, which is why it's so important that the president's been pushing back against them, both on the military side and on the economic side.
Yeah, that's one of the things that brings that Central American policy into play, right? I mean, there's the general, our hemisphere, making sure that we have at least some communications open with Central American countries. But in this, you're really specific, and you have been before, that this is almost just a basic tit-for-tat game, China in there moving into the Panama Canal and possibly changing the rules on who can go through and who can't, right? It's almost that simplistic.
That's exactly right. They're using their economic muscle to try to gain control of key points and sea lanes around the world, not just in the South China Sea, but there's a good one, a dangerous one right there in Panama, but also in places like Djibouti, Sri Lanka. They're using their economic power to gain control of key ports and key places. This is a major bit on their part to control the sea lanes around the world, and we have to push back, and I think the president and the people he has working with him are beginning that process or have begun that process. And we're seeing some improvement there, but as much improvements as we're making, the Chinese continue to make further advancements in their technology and their strategy. We've got to stay ahead of them.
When you say they're, you know, projecting their strength economically in those countries, are the Chinese doing foreign aid the way we do it? Are they going into these countries and saying, hey, we'll do this, this, and that, or give you loans? Or how do they do that?
Well, it's predatory. They lend money to a country like, take Sri Lanka, a very, you know, poor country right off the coast, southeast coast of India. They loan them a bunch of money. The country can't pay it back, and China says, okay, you can't pay the loan that you owe us back, so we'll just take a key port that you have and make it our port. And so they've done that in Djibouti. As I say, they've done that in Sri Lanka. They're trying to do it all across the South China Sea and even there around Indonesia and Malaysia. I mean, they're trying to control the sea lanes of the world, and they use those loans to do it, because once they've got these small countries, poor countries, over a barrel, owing a whole bunch of money, those countries don't have any choice but to give up key things to the Chinese. So we've got to start working with those countries to keep them from taking out those loans, and see if there isn't a better way for us to work with them to keep that.
Would you vote for a program where we... I mean, this is probably so simple. Loan them the money to pay the Chinese back off so they could... Or, I mean, how would you do that?
Well, where they already owe the money, it's problematic, to put it mildly. But we need to keep countries from taking the loans out in the first place. So we do have our own program that is a competitor to the Chinese. We need to be a little more aggressive about that program. But we also just need to sit down with friends and allies in some countries that didn't used to be friends and allies and are now, like Vietnam, and say, hey, do not do business with these people, because what they're going to do is end up taking over key parts of your country, and you lose control of your sovereignty.
Hopefully they'll be listening. Congressman Bradley Byrne, thank you again. And remind folks, too, you cut the ribbon. It is the new VA facility. Where is it? And it's open now?
It's open now. It's at the Tillman's Quarter exit off of Interstate 10. Easy to get to, very easy to get to, plenty of good parking, a very, very usable facility. I hope every veteran who needs outpatient care will take advantage of this new facility and the services that are being offered in it.
All right, Congressman Byrne, thank you for your time. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Sean, good to talk to you.
Hey, good to talk to you as well. Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
138 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. Remember, the podcast available with the 40-some-odd hours a week of live local podcasts that we do. FMTalk1065.com. Just click the link for podcast and check it out. Better yet, download. Have it done for you. All that exhausting work of downloading a podcast, you can now let the bots do it, right? Through iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, a bunch of different platforms. Check it out on our website, fmtalk1065.com. All right, it's Festival of Flowers time, and it's, you know, because how many years of this have we been doing Festival of Flowers? Well, I don't have to ask that question. I've been told it's 26 years, and we'll see if it can be backed up on this. Josh Weatherford from Weatherford's Fountain and Lawn in studio. 26 years? 26 years of this. Now, you have been part of this from the word go for this year, because the theme, I saw, I got an email here, that it is Dutch Gardens this year.
Dutch Gardens. Okay. So
what? Yeah. So what? When I help me, because I, you know, I'm a guy that doesn't know. Like, if I go walking through, I want to sound like I know something, and I see this is a garden over here, and this other one, I go, well, that in fact is a Dutch garden.
Right. So, you know, I think you always think about what are things you see. So windmills, water wheels, canals. Catherine Ahrensberg, the designer. You know, that was her big thing. So those are the three big things you probably think of, along with tulips.
Okay.
Okay. So. We have a canal that's a 150-foot long canal that stretches almost the full length of the main tent. So on one end, it's got a 6-foot water wheel that's continuously running, and okay. Then it ends into the windmill that's approximately, what, I think 21 feet tall. So almost to the very tip,
serious
top
garden
of the tent.
Josh. I mean, this is,
yes.
You're not playing.
No.
Okay, let's talk about this, because I want to get into what we'll see coming up at the Festival of Flowers. But first, kind of give us a behind-the-scenes process of building out 150 feet of canal.
Yes. So
how do you do that?
We actually started in January, start of the new year. Kent Broom actually helped us come out and mark the curves, because it's not just a straight canal. You know, they can't make it
easy. No, you can't make it
easy. It's not easy. So,
right,
you know, you have this S-shaped canal that's elongated. It's about 8 foot across. And so what you'll actually see is in that process, there's actually a 3-foot drop in elevation from one end of the canal to the other. So people will immediately walk in and be like, why is it so tall on one end and so short on the other?
Right.
Well, because the ground's not flat, unfortunately.
Gotcha.
So that's the challenge for everyone who builds anything out there, is that nothing's flat.
Right.
But you got to make it look flat. So, you know, it is 100% level, as best as I can get it for something temporary.
Right.
And so it is a curving canal, and it starts with the water wheel, ends in the windmill. So it's to give the appearance that there's some flow going on as it runs to the windmill.
Okay. So, I mean, yeah, you got to start high to be able to get the water speed to go.
Well, no. No.
It just looks that way.
It looks as though it's running, but it is level. So one end will be real short in elevation, and then as the field slopes, you're going to see it get taller and taller. And so a lot of that gets hidden with plants. Plants cover a multitude of interesting things. So
this is good. Josh Weatherford, master of illusion.
Right.
And we'll be taking part of that in the Festival of Flowers, brought to you by Wells Fargo. Let's talk about also, if we're at the Festival of Flowers and we're doing a Dutch garden, there's a flower that, even for a guy like me, I know signifies a Dutch garden, right?
Right. So the tulips.
The tulips, man.
So we will see how many they have. I believe Bellengrath Gardens is going to have a good display. And, you know, a lot of things you just need to come out and see.
Yeah, well, okay, when you come out, we now have described the big centerpiece we're going to walk around. But tell me what else we'll see when we're at the Festival of Flowers.
So you're going to see artwork, lots of artwork. But you're also going to see local landscapers who kind of take their own take on what Dutch garden should look like. So you're going to see individual gardens with different takes. But the idea is to, you know, one is to raise money for the hospital.
Right.
Obviously, for the cardiac unit, but also to display work of local talent. So not just us, but lots of companies. And there's so many people that pour hours and hours. I mean, you know, we're talking 500 plus hours just to build the canal.
Wow.
That's before plants.
Wow. Wow.
So
that goes in before you open the tents there, or open the gates, right, at Festival of Flowers. Give me a little insight here, because this is what you're doing every day, not just for Festival of Flowers. What are people in our area doing? Like, what do they want when they come to you for a fountain? Or is it a traditional, you know, a Trevi fountain? Or are they looking for
something else? What's trending right now?
So I think you see a lot of different things. So, you know, even just meeting with people today. So we met with one lady who wanted something a little more traditional,
right?
But was not normal. Okay,
traditionally abnormal. I like this.
Yes, and then we met with another client this morning who was wanting to incorporate a water feature into a new sign for their church. So it really runs the gamut from real very modern kind of new things coming on the scene to that more traditional, you know, 2-3-tiered fountain,
right?
You know, that they're going to put in their backyard. But you know, we're also doing more things that are a little not traditional, where we have disappearing water features where you don't really see where the water is, you just see stuff bubbling. You know, so we'll have some of that in our tent there as well.
You know, as you said, this is, of course, a just a tradition and a great event to raise money for the cardiac unit. But at the same time, people come out. I see people taking a lot of pictures at Festival of Flowers, getting ideas. Will you be on hand? Will people be on hand if they go, that's cool, I'd like to talk to somebody about doing that?
Yes, absolutely. So typically, every booth is going to have someone there to represent that company. And then obviously, you have the vendors area where there will be quite a few vendors, actually 10 more than last year.
Okay.
And so then obviously, there'll be people there who are selling things, but you know, we're always in our tent trying to give people advice. And we'll get people come in and want to know how to fix a fountain. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, while yes, we always love work, but we also are passionate about trying to help people. So whether they hire us to do the work or we just help them walk through and troubleshoot stuff, I mean, that's what we're there for.
Well, yeah, it's a two-part deal, right? There's the artistry and how it looks and having your garden look a certain way. And then there's, hey, the pump ain't pumping.
Right,
you know?
Right. So that, and that's, you know, just basically talking people through, hey, you got to clean your fountain. You know, it's right. Not magical. But, you
may
know,
look it's magical, but it's actually mechanical.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So people come out by the booth. Also, I know there's a lot of activities for the kids.
Right. So Sunday will be Family Fun Day. I believe it's from 11 to 4. And so there will be activities for the kids. There'll be princesses there. Personal Edge Fitness will actually be sponsoring an agility course for the kids as well.
Okay, good. So that sounds other. Like tired kids. I like that. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Yes,
Sunday,
more of that.
Tired kids is always good when they go to bed.
Yes.
So then there's going to be some other activities for the kids. So it's a great day at the end of the show to bring your kids out, let them see. You know, I think that's what helps inspires kids down the road to want to do stuff in the garden or just be outside.
You just put the ball on the tee, Josh. How the heck did you get into this?
So my grandmother was always in the garden when I was young, so that was one inspiration. And then when I got into college, you know, I started doing this on the side, and then we got into the fountain part of it, and then it's just grown from there. So 13 plus years of doing stuff, so yeah,
it's a cool deal. Okay, Josh Weatherford's who I'm talking to with Weatherford's Fountain and Lawn, but we're talking about the Festival of Flowers. The gates, the canvases pull back on the tents on Thursday. It goes through Sunday, like you said, Family Fun Day. People need to get their tickets beforehand or at the gate. Like, what's the thing?
Either or. Okay. Obviously, you know, always getting them ahead of time, and then you don't have to wait in a line to get tickets.
Okay.
But there will also be tickets available at the door. So.
And if people have not been before, as it's been, maybe it was years ago, but in recent memory, it's always been at Providence Hospital.
Providence Hospital, behind the hospital.
Okay. Yep. So, you'll see it. Yeah, when you pull in any of the parking lots of Providence, you'll see.
You're in the very back.
You'll see the Festival of Flowers. And I guess website, just festivalflowers.com. Go there.
I believe so.
All right, more information there.
Also, Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook.
And Instagram.
All right, and the IG. No Twitter. No Snapchat.
Not my department.
I love it. All right, man. We'll see y'all out there this weekend.
Excellent. Right.
For more information and tickets, you can dial 639-2050 or festivalofflowers.com. That gets kicked off once again on Thursday. We'll remind you many, many times here. Goes through Sunday, and more info on their website and, of course, their Facebook page and their Instagram. I mean, a Festival of Flowers kind of custom-made for the Insta, as my children call it. The only old folks like me call it Instagram. All right. 147, coming right back. Take a quick news break, and then your calls and text at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 151 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Dalton was just asking me, had I seen the Donna Brazile story? Yeah, well, I saw it over in one of our monitors here in the studio. I think it's interesting. Donna Brazile, who, remember, let's do a little history dive before we get into what's brand new. Donna Brazile, one of us, Gulf Coaster, but Donna Brazile, remember, fired from CNN after leaked emails suggested she used her position to pass information to the Clinton campaign about the debates. Remember this? Back in, way back in 2016, when DNC interim chair Donna Brazile was fired from her position as a political commentator at CNN over emails, when those emails leaked, remember, and all the different stuff that came out of those leaked DNC emails. One of them was that Brazile had been giving basically the questions. I mean, I think so. I think literally the questions to Hillary Clinton's campaign before they had the CNN debate. And she was, here's what the test is going to be. Go bone up on this. Here you go, Hillary Clinton. Because back, here it is. According to Politico, CNN released a statement asserting the network had accepted Brazile's resignation on October 14th of 2016. CNN stated they were completely uncomfortable with the content of the email, seemingly showing she had obtained information in advance about questions to be posed at the CNN town hall meeting debates. So, okay, that's the Donna Brazile. Okay, so that same Donna Brazile. And so it goes on here to say, Ms. Brazile's infraction, however, may be more damaging. Her sharing of questions with a candidate would seem to undercut the impartiality of the event as a CNN contributor, potentially reflecting poorly on the network. How's that gone, CNN? They said the network, which received big ratings for the debate. Okay. So there you go. So Donna Brazile was fired from CNN because she was basically, to put it in Sullivanese, she'd given the answer or given the questions to the Clinton campaign before the town hall debate thing. All right. So now what's new in the world of Donna Brazile is she's been added to the roster at Fox News. So that's today. I saw that. She did a little quick, you know, I couldn't hear what they were saying because we had to mute the monitors in here, but I saw that she was on and talking with one of the hosts on Fox. Here's the story. So Donna Brazile has penned her own opinion piece. Here you go, foxnews.com. Donna Brazile, why I'm excited to join Fox News and take part in a civil and sensible debate. A question, will Donna be able to get any kind of questions to President Trump? No? Okay. It says here, let's read part of this op-ed. You and I together for the first time. So Donna Brazile writes, I'm excited by the opportunity to share my perspective and views with the Fox News audience and help shape the dialogue at this important juncture in our history. More importantly, I'm eager to learn from the experience. Okay. Says the 2020 presidential election is a consequential moment in American democracy. Representative Republic. Everything we believe in as Americans will be examined and, in essence, ratified by our votes. But it can. No, it won't. No, it won't. There are so many opinions. Come on, Donna. There are so many opinions in this country. Our votes show some part of it, but they don't show the essence of our beliefs. Goes on to say, but it concerns me, as it does the majority of good Americans, that our national debate has become hostile and disrespectful. Ding, ding, ding. I agree with that one. We no longer simply agree to disagree. Too often we demonize the intentions of others. I agree with that one, too. Our lines of communications are frayed, if not broken. In order for us to best decide as a people how to better protect and preserve our way of life, we need to first be able to hear what the others are saying without the filter of bias and contempt. Not until we once again become practiced at treating those of differing views with civility and respect can we begin to join each other to. Okay, well, this is like a graduation speech or something from Donna Brazile. She does. Okay, good. Go a couple paragraphs down. Good. She gives the disclaimer. I fully admit that in previous lives as a campaign staffer, presidential campaign manager, and Democrat Party official, my own lack of civility in the heat of battle has been on full display. Good for you. And it wasn't pretty. I should have been wise enough and humble enough to have listened to my mother, Jean, who often would tell me, the third of nine children, to shut up and allow my siblings to speak and to listen and really listen to what they had to say. She knew I wasn't listening so much as I was pausing before launching again into an argument. may have a young Donna Brazile in my house. My mother tried to teach us Brazil kids a lesson that we all needed to heed as citizens. Listen more, talk less. Be civil to one another. Find common ground. Contempt is hatred towards others. There are lessons in and the attitude I will bring to Fox News. Okay. So the, and she goes on in this piece. I'll put this out on the Twitter feed. But, you know, here, will they, because of I mean, Donna Brazile is not coming in as like an impartial journalist. Or even, you know, somebody who's doing opinion poll. I mean, or opinion show. She's going to be. I mean, she's coming in as the opinion. I guess as part of the opinion of the left, right? I guess that's the idea. Bringing her. Will she within Fox News? If Fox News and Donna Brazile probably was one that nodded her head yes that Fox News was the epicenter of all things wrong in the world, right, in media, will she have her own office or will it become an embassy? Will she have, like, will it be the Donna Brazile embassy where that'll be like sovereign ground for liberal thought within? Because if you look at everybody in the DNC that had painted Fox News as never being, and there are some shows on Fox News I completely agree with them on, but that at no time Fox News is fair and balanced, right? They say that's not possible. Will her office there actually be an embassy within the country of Fox News Channel? I don't know. All right, so there's some of the breaking news out there for Donna Brazile. Take it how you want to. Then a couple of the other stories. You see the poll? Where was it? This was a USA Today poll. Now I've lost it. It's what happens when you have 8,000 tabs open in your show prep. But essentially it was a poll showing how many Americans agree with the Mueller investigation being a witch hunt, right? And the president had... And when I can find it, I will give you the information. I know that there it is. There it is. Finally came up. President Trump is talking about this poll that shows half of Americans agree the Mueller investigation is a witch hunt. It was a USA Today Suffolk poll. And the president tweeted and said, wow, a Suffolk USA Today poll just out states 50% of Americans agree that Robert Mueller's investigation is a witch hunt at MSNBC. Very few think it's legit. We will soon find out. And then question as an interrogatory. Okay. So here's half of the people in the survey said they agreed that the Mueller investigation is a witch hunt, and 47% said they did not. Pretty interesting. I said that, of course, the responses divided along partisan lines. 86% of Republicans side with the president, just 14% of Democrats. But the more interesting one is independents. 54% of independents surveyed said they agreed with President Trump that he is a victim of a witch hunt. Who cares, Republicans, Democrats? What about swing votes? 54% say think it's a witch hunt. All right, we'll pick this one up again tomorrow. I'll see you mañana for Mobile Mornings.